Now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We got a very fun show ready and in store for you tonight. This is Crave Wrestling. I'm Chris Featherstone along with Ryan Fuqua.
Good evening out there, everyone. And in fact, it's going to be very fun. We hopped in the old DeLorean, and me and Chris are feeling 10 years younger here for the flavor of the week this week.
Absolutely. It is the 2002 year in review. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that. 2002 was one of the most prestigious classes that come out of the WWE as far as debuts are concerned, and there's a couple other marquee and memorable parts about 2002, so we're going to have a lot of fun with that. Feel free to flood the chat room. It is open, of course, like I started last week, and I will continue to do. Just having random trivia on the chat room. Feel free to answer them on the chat room, or if you really think that you're confident enough to say the answer in front of a national audience, feel free to give us a call, 347-884-8452, and send any tweets to at Crave Wrestling, and we will read any tweets that are worthy to be read. And, of course, anything in the chat room that is worthy to be read, we will read it as well. So let's actually start off with the question here. Here we go. So what was the team name of Coco Beware and Owen Hart? That is your question to ponder. And what was the team name of Coco Beware and Owen Hart? These questions, like this last week, and they will continue to just be so random. So there's no specific time frame, no era, no specific topic. They're just going to be random questions to see how good you are. So we'll answer that shortly. If someone else do not answer that before we do, by chat room or calling or even tweeting at Crave Wrestling. Let's go with this week's news. Ken Shamrock accused of assaulting a woman he thought was a man, which was an interesting bit there. Claire Lynch, she quits due to an online harassment. Like I explained before, she is an actress and had a couple spots on television before. And there were some people, some ridiculous wrestling fans who decided to take kayfabe into real life and flood her website with just disparaging remarks and just ridiculous harassing, just verbiage and just ridiculous marks on her website, just talking about how bad her acting is and things like that. Acting wasn't good, true, but at the same time, you know, it's wrestling. So there's some people out there, unfortunately, that believes that wrestling is real life. Still, that's pretty interesting.
There's some cheesiness to it, you know?
Yeah.
Always.
Absolutely. Butch Reed, Hacksaw Butch Reed, a former Doom manager of former Doom wrestler, who also who teamed up in that Doom tag team with Ron Simmons. A lot of WWE fans know Ron Simmons, but Butch Reed is also a legend in the business. He's in jail for a probation violation, so still currently in jail as of as of now, unless he got released within the past few hours. And then finally, Chris Jericho's run was originally supposed to be until the end of May, and then he agreed to stay until August due to the album being delayed, the new Fozzy album. So as you know, he'll be touring until March the 4th, I believe, is when the date is, and I'm sure that he would want a good old WrestleMania payday, so I can definitely see him being involved within that month span in a feud that would have a good match. So let's go to the Raw episode. I already got the answer, high energy, in the chat room. That is definitely the right answer. The team of the team of Owen Hart and Coco Beware was known as high energy, and they had some crazy gear, one of the most bizarre ring gears that I've ever seen in my life. So let's go to Raw. Lawler comes in the ring, demands an apology from CM Punk. CM Punk comes out, declines, and challenges Lawler to a fight. I like this, actually. I like the little mini feud. Actually, I'm a fan of this. I think it's a good way to take us away from the monotony of Cena and Punk, to add Jerry Lawler as a buffer between just those two, because basically we've seen it all just about when it came to just a storyline build of Cena and Punk, and I'm actually a fan of throwing Lawler as a buffer between the two.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, like you said, just a filler, but I think this promo that Punk was cutting was, I don't know if it's finally the promo we've been waiting for or the heelish promo or what, but he kind of is distancing himself from tweener to actual heel. So maybe that promo was it, and, you know, like I said, the kick in the back of the head last week and everything.
Yep. Indeed, indeed. Then we will go to the next segment, which is actually a match. Ryback defeats Jack Swagger. The Feed Me More chance is starting to be very, very unanimous and very loud in the arena. They're definitely eclipsing the Goldberg chants, which are relatively faint now. They were pretty loud at first. They're relatively faint. It seems like Ryback is coming around to the WWE universe. I'm really happy that he sets up that killer clothesline with the whole Feed Me More thing that he actually had as a finisher when he was with the Nexus, when he was Skip Sheffield. And then lastly, I want to about this, just the stat that Michael Cole said was just ridiculous. I mean, it was embarrassing. He said that Jack Swagger won the U.S. title on January 16th of this year and has not won a match on Raw since. This is your 2010 World Heavyweight Champion. So that's very, very unfortunate stat for Jack Swagger.
Yeah, he may be the most unsuccessful former Money in the Bank, you know, winner out of, you know, all that. So, man, that's tough. Poor Jackie boy. But yeah, Ryback, man, Feed Me More. I guess I'm on board, man. It's 1 week. I'm kind of like, it's when he faces the jobbers. I'm just not into it, but facing somebody like Swagger, you know, this is what I said. Why not use the jobbers that are already on the roster, you know, so that's pretty cool. But I love the flailing of the arms and the Feed Me More chant, and I don't know, man, I kind of like the old music better, but yeah, we'll see. Maybe the newer music will grow on me, but for the time being, I'm good at his eyes getting cleared up a little bit there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I agree. I agree that I'm coming around with Ryback as well, and I can see. I agree with the music too. The old music is better, but I can see the reason why they had the newer music, because it has words to it and things of that nature. Yeah. So, next question, next trivia question: what pay per view did Hell in a Cell debut? So, if you want to give us the pay per view, if you want to one up, if you want to one up us. Give us the year and the actual match as well. But pay-per-view is good enough. But the year, the match, and even if you want to throw the month in there as well. So see how good you are as far as wrestling trivia. It seemed like the high-energy answer, the high-energy question was relatively easy to the people in the chat room. So let's go to the next segment.
I think I know that second question, and I think most people might think it's another thing, but I think I know. I'll wait until someone answers it to give my guess.
Looks like it's already been answered.
Oh, wow.
The match was answered. They're trying to type in the month, which is wrong so far, but the match is right. But the pay-per-view is what I'm looking for, the pay-per-view. So let's go to Layla and Natalya. Layla defeats Natalya. Layla gets booze. And Vicky Guerrero, she comes in during, like in the beginning, just stands at this at the steps the whole time, which was awkward. But Layla's getting booze. Just Layla's just not getting over. I mean, she tried to do some type of weird dance throughout, but at the same time, that didn't get over. She's just not getting over. I'm just not a fan of what they're doing with Layla right now.
Yeah, she's been doing those little weird dances and, you know, trying too hard as a face to get over, and kind of vice versa with Natalya, where she's too animated as a heel, and if you ever notice, she's kind of out there smiling. So I don't know, maybe they need to keep Natalya face and keep Layla heel, because it seems like that's when they both have their most success, probably. So
yeah,
that's all I got for the diva spot. Week.
Yeah, there's usually more than what we cover every week. So
yeah, didn't understand the thing either. I mean, I don't get that. They could have just waited. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. let's see. Then Vicky Guerrero announced that she was upset at AJ having Ziggler's Money in the Bank briefcase on the line last week, and that she should be a general manager. AJ comes out, smacks, and beats up Vicky, and then Vicky runs away. I'm also liking this, liking the AJ and Vicky thing. Not so much on the AJ being so physical. I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. But at the same time, it does seem like, you know, this is a decent filler as well for AJ.
Well, I'm guessing the only thing to come out of her beating up Vicky is maybe somehow that's how the WWE board of directors, so to speak, would come and take her GM spot. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand it. I guess that's the only thing I can get out of it, storyline-wise, is that it's, or later down the road, they could say, hey, she assaulted her, you're fired from the GM spot, and I don't know. Now, that's the only thing I can get out of it. I don't know who they would replace her with, but, yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. Then we get the start of Triple H degenerate video packages for the Is He Going to Retire the first one was the DX video package. I liked all of them. I liked this one to start off with. It was more on a high note, and it seemed like that was a good starter for the video package, and then followed by the Daniel Bryan anger management session. And the person who played Harold that was sitting next to Daniel Bryan, he actually is a relative known indie wrestler. His name is Scorpio Sky. He also was Mason Andrews during the X Division tournament to crown the new champion Destination X. He also was on the Destination X Last Chance pay-per-view. He's at the Last Chance match on Destination X pay-per-view as well. So when I saw him, I said, yeah, that looks like the X Division. And then I remember Scorpio Sky as well. I did a little research and it confirmed it. So yeah, it was good to see an indie wrestler get a little paycheck for having a bit on a WWE programming.
Yeah, these little segments were pretty good, pretty funny. Well, as for the Triple H one, yeah, the nostalgia and taking me back and stuff with him throughout the years, so that was cool. I thought it was funny how Foley had tweeted saying that he'd lost 3 times in one highlight package. So that tells you Foley's career right there with Trip. But yeah, the Daniel Bryan anger management skits, those are great. We'll talk about the last one later on and how Kane went off. That was probably the best spot of the night.
Yeah. Then we got Jerry Lawler agreeing to fight CM Punk. And then John Cena defeated The Miz in a good match. It wasn't like animated. It wasn't very gimmicky. It was just a legitimately good match that I think that we need to see a little bit more in WWE programming.
Yeah, when they were coming out, I said I would have put Miz over in this one. I don't know what it would have done for him, but I don't know. And you know me, I like Cena. I say I somehow squeeze that in there every week. But I don't know, I guess I would have put Miz over somehow. Maybe, I just don't know how. It would have been tough, but somehow I would have done it.
Possibly a CM Punk run in. That would seem like that's the only thing that would make sense.
Yeah, but I like the whole CM Punk and Lawler being separate, even though, you know, Cena and Punk are going to face off, you know. Like, I like the side feud right now, so. Yeah, too predictable, though, in this.
Yeah, what do you think about, like, a count out or a DQ or something like that? Maybe that would have...
Yeah, that's a Miz-style win, so that would have worked, too. That's something that Miz is accustomed to, his character.
Yeah, indeed. Answer for the trivia question that's out right now. Michaels and Undertaker, 1997. That is that was in the chat room. That is the correct answer. But the pay-per-view was not said. The pay-per-view was Bad Blood, October of 1997. Hell in a Cell match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. It's also the debut of who we just talked about, Kane. So
First Hell in a Cell, that goes back to Shawn Michaels and Undertaker have both been in inaugural matches. Michaels, also the creator of the ladder match and Iron Man match. Undertaker, the casket match and Buried Alive match. So, and Inferno, I believe, too. So that's, those two guys, they've made a lot of matches combined.
Shawn Michaels was also in the Elimination Chamber.
Yes, that's true.
Which we will talk about later. So then we will go to the next video package for Triple H. When he tears the quad and returns, which was also a 2001 leading into 2002 point there. So we're going to there's a lot to talk about 2002 because we've already made two references of 2002. So that return, we'll get to it later, but the return was just phenomenal. Good package for Triple H as well, and that was followed by another anger management session when Kane appeared. So the anger management sessions were pretty good. I think I can see that where they're doing the multiple type of segments to one kind of story throughout the 3 hours of the show. And I think out of all the three of them, this is probably my favorite one that they've done so far. So far, so good with the whole anger management thing for me. The whole goat face thing was really funny, too, when he said that it was his son and he was wearing the mask for a play. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, all this has been funny, man. Daniel Bryan showing a comedic side. The multiple segments thing for the, you know, the whole same story throughout the night, me and my buddy were talking, we were watching this. It's kind of a little Attitude Era-esque, you know, where they would do the same story throughout the night. I mean, I guess, I don't know, I remember a lot of Stone Cold Steve Austin type stuff, seeing him multiple times in a night, so that's immediately why we probably thought of Attitude Era with that.
Absolutely. Next question, who were the faces of fear in the WCW? Two men, they were a tag team. They're actually one of my favorite tag teams in the WCW. They were called the Faces of Fear, and they were a part of a group. So if you want to name the Faces of Fear, and if you want to one-up, seems like there's always a one-up part to it, what group they were in and who was the manager, feel free to do that in the chat room or tweet at Crave Wrestling or call in and say it live on air. The number is 347-884-8452. Also, if you have any raw thoughts, feel free to call in as well. We'll be doing the Flavor of the Week. We'll have a good part of time, good portion of time for that. So feel free to call in there. We're also going to have weekly SmackDown and Impact Wrestling and ROH analysis as well. So feel free to call in at 347-884-8452. Then we go into Santino defeating Heath Slater. Oksana tries to distract Santino by coming out. And I don't know, the whole Cobra thing, you know, and being distracted by Oksana, I'm not too fond of that. And it just, I don't know, at the end of the day, it just seems like Cesaro is gonna win, and it's just kind of killing time with the inevitable. I really want someone who has a better shot of winning the U.S. title to be in the feud, except for, you know, instead of Santino. And as much as I like Santino, it actually wouldn't have been a bad thing, in my opinion, to have Heath Slater go over Santino because of the distraction.
Yeah, man, that match was tough. I mean, they got boring chance at one point, you know?
Yep.
So that was, I don't know what the problem was there, because Santino's light. Keith Slater, you know, the one-man rock band, got a little more love, you know, with the lead-up to Raw 1000 and all the legends. But, yeah, Oksana comes out, but no Cesaro. Like, it doesn't, I don't know. They could have did something else there. Just have Santino get his rematch on a Raw or SmackDown and have Cesaro move on, you know?
Yeah.
It's too basic.
I think that's a great idea. I definitely would. It would be a bathroom break for me as far as this being on the pay-per-view, which it seemed like it's going to be, but... Yeah, it seemed like it's going to be
boring chance. Santino, that's the thing.
that's almost oxymoronic in nature, but it definitely wasn't yesterday. It just seems like they need to do. I mean, I like Santino. He's really honed his craft as that type of character. But at the same time, him being involved in U.S. title feud, not a good idea. So, Barbarian Haku was the answer that was given to and the chat room. That is true to an extent. Haku was called Ming at the time. So, no answers for the group or the manager. The group that they were in were called the Dungeon of Doom, and the manager was Jimmy Hart. So we'll go to another question. What pay-per-view did The Undertaker throw Mankind off the cell? So that is the question going on right now. Next, we got another weird pairing, the Sin Cara weird pairing of the week. Brodus Clay was his partner this week. He defeats they defeat Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. I'm glad that it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird because I understand why they did this. You know, just kind of like a pick me up for the evening, which is okay, but at the same time, I don't know. And it's good that Cody Rhodes took the fall. And it was, and I guess all things considered, it's good that Cody Rhodes took the fall over Sandow, because it doesn't really lose much of Sandow's steam. But just Cody Rhodes these days is just, I mean, he definitely don't deserve what he's getting right now.
Yeah, there was a point we thought he'd be world champ. Now I don't know. But as for Sandow and Rhodes, kind of the two same type of characters. I could see them teaming up a little more, not so much being legitimate tag team, but just every now and then, you know, just teaming up or helping each other out. I don't, you know, something like that along those lines. Because they, you know, same type of promos, same type of character almost. But funny thing, I seen Sin Cara moving around out there afterwards, dancing with Brodus Clay, and got to thinking, like, wow, he had a little two left feet in the ring when he was giving people potato shots and missing spots, so it's shocking to see him be able to get on beat there and move around.
Yeah, that's a very good observation there. That's very true. Looks like that other question was easy as well. King of the Ring 1998. That is the truth. Looks like I might have to go a little bit more difficult when the next question comes. We will go to the next anger management session. This is actually my favorite one of the night. Kane just shares a story, and he really goes hard into the details of the story. He brought up some good moments in wrestling history that we remember, and then he did it, ladies and gentlemen. He did it. He brought up the Katie Vick, so that was very interesting that he did that. But it was a real well written portion of the skit there that I liked, and I was a big fan of what Kane is doing as far as helping this anger management skit out as well.
Yeah, I was shocked that they brought up the Katie Vick thing. I mean, heck, even with people being able to just Google it, you know, and see the old clips out there. So I thought they'd bury that in the vault forever. But I just thought this was great, man. And it was just Kane basically summing up his Hall of Fame career. So I loved it.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely Hall of Fame career summary. All right, I'm going to go a little bit more difficult here. What pay-per-view did Sting win his first world title in the WCW or NWA world title, however you want to put it? What pay-per-view, what year as well, I'm going to make it hard. What year and pay-per-view did Sting win his first world title in the WCW NWA? So let's go next to the Triple H video package, number 3, highlighting his achievements. I was a big fan of that. It was, once again, it was very tactfully done. The next R-Truth defeats Daniel Bryan by count out. I actually loved this whole thing. I loved that he tells little Jimmy that they are in Milwaukee, and that's actually a rib on himself when he was R-Truth before and did the whole what's up thing when he would come out and rap, which got so redundant. They were in Milwaukee, and what he would usually do, he would call out that he would get the cheap pops from the city and say the city and state name, but sometimes just the city. But he said Green Bay one time when they were in Milwaukee, and he got booed pretty bad. But he basically starts yes chants and says, you know, they know that he knows that they are in Milwaukee and got some good cheap pops there, and gives Daniel Bryan the mic, and he starts shouting no outside, and caused a count out victory by R-Truth. I'm telling you, there was a time in his face run. I was a big R-Truth fan, even in not so much a K-Quick fan, but when he was on R-Truth and TNA, I liked him, and then when he came back to WWE, I liked him as R-Truth, and but the whole rapping started to get redundant, and then eventually when he was with Eve, that was the breaker for me. I started to dislike him, and then when he turned heel, I started to like him a lot. He was actually in a world title match at a pay-per-view. They really put some stock in him as a heel. I don't know, man. There's still a part of me that just wishes that they give him some type of big single title. I mean, I know he was U.S. champ before, but I don't know. I still like R-Truth that much to give him some love. I know this is going towards the twilight of his career because of his age, but I just really like R-Truth still in that capacity.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to him getting that big singles title push, even if it was on his way out, you know. So, I mean, look at Mark Henry. He got his eventually. But when Truth was with Eve, and remember he had changed his theme for a second too. Yeah, you're right. It was all bad. So, and that was before Eve was horrible Eve. So, yeah. And the Milwaukee thing, yeah, that was pretty awesome, you know. However long was that, like a year later, that, yeah, it was a while ago, because I think it was like right after the Green Bay Packers had won the Super Bowl, and I think that was one of the reasons he had said Green Bay, you know, trying to get the extra cheap pop, and so kudos for him being able to make up for that.
Yeah, definitely. Then we get the Triple H in-ring promo. It says he's not sure if he's going to retire. I just wasn't a fan of this. Honestly, there's some reports that this actually wasn't even going to happen, but they chose to do the promo because the retirement thing wasn't as it wasn't taken as serious by many people as they wanted it to, so he comes out and cut a promo. I'm just, you know, basically to cut a promo and say that he's not sure if he's going to retire, I mean, that's still leaving us as saying, oh, okay, there's nothing definitive, which, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, why did you come out in the first place and say, I don't know if I'm going to retire? So I actually wasn't a fan of this part of the night. I wasn't. His video packages was good, but the payoff what his promo was not good to me.
Well, like I said last week, I thought it would be, or the past 2 weeks when I said I thought Brock Lesnar would win, and then after he did, I said I'd figure it was because, you know, they were going to write him off TV for a while. They didn't have to do the retirement bit here. I think that was taken a little too far. And you're right, it's not believable. I mean, because he's saying, I don't know. Then he's saying, I'm going to fight Brock Lesnar. So I don't know. You're kind of confusing us here, Tripp. Got to give us a definitive answer. But I would have just took him off TV until the Rumble, probably, you know. I mean, I know that's, what, like 4 or 5 months, but still, so. He can use the time off. It's, I mean, he's got 2 matches this year, and he's 0-2, so it wouldn't have hurt him not being on TV.
Definitely agree with that. Answer to the, got a couple of attempts to try the right answer in the chat room. No right answer yet, so I'll go ahead and say it. The answer is the Great American Bash of 1990. He defeated Ric Flair. It's one of my favorite moments of wrestling history. For those who don't know, Sting is my all-time favorite wrestler. Chris Jericho is my modern history favorite wrestler. So, yeah, Sting is the man for me. And when he won at the Great American Bash of 1990, it was just an amazing moment for me. So I was very happy with that. Another question coming up soon. Then we got Sheamus Norton defeating Dolph Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio. Nice backbreaker, bro kick combination. I really don't have much to say about this match. It was a decent tag team match. I think that it was, I understand what they're doing with Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio, but Orton and Ziggler, I don't know if they're going to start anything between them, but I do understand the purpose of Orton just being around and just kind of floating around the picture right now.
Blah. This match was just, it was there, I guess. I don't know. I don't want to see any combination of these four starting a feud, even though I know Del Rio and Sheamus, please save us. Please help us from that one, man. When is that going to end officially? But I don't know. I'm not feeling any of the combo of these four superstars in a feud. And I just, this match was just there. I don't know. It's tough, man. It's tough. When we get to SmackDown, I'll explain a little more.
Yeah. Throughout the night, they had some interesting parts, like I said, in the anger management class, and then Kane actually comes out as a special guest commentator, but not really, because he didn't say a word during the match between Zack Ryder and David Otunga. I'll tell you what, I mean, just the WWE a year later. I mean, these are two people who, you know, were just really there as far as upper mid-carders, and especially Otunga. Ryder's run was more late 2010, but Otunga's was, you know, he was the man, you know, as even earlier this year, you know, when he was Laurinaitis's assistant, and especially when he was Laurinaitis's assistant, like I said before, you know, I would rather him be U.S. champ than Cesaro. I mean, not for the purposes of athleticism, because I actually like Cesaro better than Otunga, but just as far as readiness and things of that nature, I definitely think Otunga would be a better choice. Kane chokes Ryder and then looks over at Otunga and ends up choke slamming him. Bad chokeslam taken by Otunga. Definitely, I noticed that it wasn't really good chokeslam there, but I guess a decent portion of the show, seeing how we looked at the anger management sessions.
They're killing me. Once again, like I had said the week prior, you bring Otunga back after this time, and like you said, he was on a roll a while ago, but why another L? And then to Zack Ryder, of all people. I'm not saying Ryder shouldn't get a W here or get over. It's just like, okay, what's Otunga's point now? Is he just going to go back to jobbing, just because Laurinaitis isn't around? I don't get it. And then Ryder, will we consistently see him? And then the whole, like you said, Kane choking Ryder and then chokeslamming Otunga, that just didn't make any sense to me. I guess I see what they're trying to do and go with it and anger thing, but that was whack to me. That whole segment, other than him coming out and Michael Cole standing up, not wanting to sit next to him, being afraid, that was whack.
Interesting. 347-884-8452 was the number to call. Just having a bunch of fun here with the trivia questions. Got more coming soon. If you have any raw thoughts, be sure to call in 347-884-8452 for the chat rooms. We're doing some fun trivia and got the flavor of the week, year in review of 2002 coming up soon. So I'm sure there's a lot of comments that wants to be said about that. Any tweets, send them to @CraveWrestling. Then we get the last segment, CM Punk defeating Jerry Lawler in a cage match. It was kind of brutal at the end. Eventually tells Lawler to call him best in the world. Lawler denies. Punk beats him up more. Then Cena comes out and has cage lifted up, and then Punk eventually rolls out and slithers away. Good heel. It was a good way to get heel heat for Punk. Honestly, I feel this way, the way that you feel with Miz and Cena. I think Lawler should have went over in this one, even if Punk would have kicked Lawler in the back of the head and he would have fell out of the cage or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been better if Lawler would have went over and then Punk be mad that happened, because it was kind of like a fluke, and then he could have beat him up in that manner. Just putting him in an Anaconda vice and then beating him up more, it was kind of bland to me, and I really wasn't a big fan of that ending.
Yeah, and over just like that, so much for us thinking that Lawler might, just maybe, the little glimmer of hope that Lawler might get a title shot and win, but yeah, it's that washed down the drain real quick. So I don't know. Do you think Punk just moves on and feud, just gets back at Cena up until Night of Champion, or you think him and Lawler, that's it, because it was the cage? And
I think it's it with Lawler and Punk. They may even pull something like Lawler won't be on the Raw next week to sell his injuries or something crazy that, just to give us a week to just kind of forget about it.
Or just be gone until Night of Champions and help Cena win or something, so even though Cena doesn't need anyone to help him be put over.
Right. I agree. I think that would be better, but I don't see him being held off for that much longer, just because they probably don't want any type of reaction. They probably don't want any type of steam rolling for Lawler. We got our Raw correspondent, Derek on the line. Derek, let us know your thoughts.
The Kane segment was awesome. It was classic WWE back in the WWF, back in the 80s when they had Tuesday Night Titans. It was classic, and I liked it. It was very funny. Good for Kane. I love Kane, and I like all the exposure he gets. Triple H is him retiring was very unsettling. Makes me feel like an old person. But he's the last of a dying breed from the Attitude Era. And I really don't want him to go out losing to a useless Brock Lesnar. So my thoughts, concerns, complaints. Chris Jericho rules. I always liked him. So what's your thoughts?
Thanks a lot, Derek. You definitely that's our Raw correspondent, Derek. Thanks so much for the call. You definitely gained about 50 points in my book with the Chris Jericho salutation there. So I agree. We basically covered those points, and I agree. It was a good analysis, and I think that he's spot on as far as the unsettling Triple H thing and the Kane segments.
Oh yeah. Last of a dying, like you said, last of a dying breed, Triple H, Attitude Era. I'm guessing Christian is the only one that on a weekly basis, and maybe not even really that much, you know, but from the Attitude Era, Christian, Kane, because Jericho's in and out, and Trips, like we said, only had two matches this year. Christian and Kane are the two, and then Taker's only had one match. But I'm thinking only Christian and Kane. Is that you got somebody else? Big Show.
Mark Henry, I would put in there. He came in 96.
Yeah.
But he's in.
Yeah, it's getting scarce.
It is definitely. So, speaking of Christian, no SmackDown or Raw appearance. What in the world is that all about? Don't quite understand that. Christian deserves a lot better. I will continue to say that. So then we go to SmackDown here. Before we go to SmackDown, got another question. What was the dog's name that came out with the British Bulldogs? Speaking of the 80s, that's a 80s question there. What was the dog's name that came out with the British Bulldogs? Let's go to WWE SmackDown. Randy Orton in-ring promo. Sheamus comes out. Then Booker T, then Alberto Del Rio. Booker books a match with the Orton and Alberto Del Rio for number one contendership. Ryback defeats Jinder Mahal. Layla defeats Alicia Fox. Heath Slater defeats Sin Cara. Post-match attack by Cody Rhodes. Sheamus defeats Dolph Ziggler by disqualification. Ziggler tries to cash it in, but takes it back. Santino entering promo and talks to the Cobra, interrupted by Cesaro and Oksana. R-Truth and Kofi defeats Primo Nipico. Tag team scuffle between backstage between R-Truth and Kofi. Primetime players, Primo Nipico, the Usos, and Kid and Gabriel, which just recently made a comment that they are strongly considering naming their team International Airstrike, which is interesting. They did that backstage after the Truth and Kofi Kingston interview. Alberto Del Rio defeats Randy Orton cleanly, to make some tap out, actually, to become the number one contender. He gets upper hand on Sheamus post-match, and then Ziggler tries to cash it in, but gets RKO'd by Orton. New music by Cesaro, really weird. I was getting used to the rugby-style music and ended up liking it. Now, some really odd music that I have no idea what it means or how it aligns with the whole multiple languages Cesaro thing. It's really weird. funny impersonation by Titus O'Neil, Booker T impersonation at the announcer's table. That was pretty funny, on like a pot of net bones is what he said. Mm. And then weird match with Layla and Alicia Fox. Eve comes out and congratulates Layla and Caitlin. I don't understand that. I didn't understand it at all. I like Sin Cara, but I was definitely okay with Heath Slater getting the win over that. And then Ryback defeats Jinder Mahal. Just all that build just for a match on SmackDown, which is pretty odd to me. And then just the tag team little multiple tag team thing. I was actually a big fan of that segment. It looks like that's going to be the tag team match for a Night of Champions, which I'm definitely a fan of. Finally, they're trying to revamp the tag team scene, which I'm definitely a fan of.
Yeah. For the SmackDown, I know I said I liked Randy Orton's spot as having no direction, you know, just come out, have a match, doesn't really need to cut promos, doesn't need a feud. But the whole him cleanly tapping to Del Rio, that was just, I mean, that was just so awful to me. One, you know, me and Del Rio, like I told you, I'm done with that. So that just really upset me there. That didn't make any sense to do that. SmackDown has got to get better, man. Like, I don't know. They just took the summer off, you know? Like, it's... Sheamus is turning into John Cena circa 95, 6, and 7. Or, no, I'm sorry, 2005, 6, and 7, where he was just ridiculously unbeatable, and it was the same thing over and over, every match, every pay-per-view, too predictable. I mean, I'm shocked the fans haven't turned on Sheamus yet. It's just too predictable, kind of the same stuff. Do something and do something in a hurry. I mean, this is, fall is here, so it's like a new season for WWE as well as, you know, shows on other shows on TV. So that's how they do that. But yeah, they got to do something, man. It's just too repetitive, man. I'm tired of seeing Sheamus win cleanly all the time. I like Sheamus for a while there. I mean, I was sky high on him. He was my top three, but the whole repetitive winning cleanly and just, I don't know, it's becoming too Cena-like. And I know I may sound crazy by saying, hey, my top wrestler wins all the time, but I'm sure you know what I'm saying, what I'm getting at. Or you at least understand.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You got to lose sometimes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I definitely think that, the thing is, to get it won't hurt Sheamus. A loss right now won't hurt Sheamus. I think there was some stat about the biggest streak right now. I believe is Ryback, if I'm not mistaken, and then second is Sheamus. I think he's heading towards 20 straight matches. I think it's probably like 16 or something like that. But yeah, just almost 20 straight matches. You know what I mean? That's a big deal in these
five
days.
Months.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. So,
right.
Yeah, that's insane indeed. So let's go to Impact.
I watched that real quick. Like I said, I watched 1 year where The Rock, when I was at the height of my Rock fandom, I think this was 99 going into like 2000, for a full year. He went from like WrestleMania to Backlash of next year. So 13 months, I watched him chase the title, lose at pay-per-views, every title. I mean, he had numerous title matches and would lose,
he was still relevant. You know, the crowd still loved him. You know, it was just, it made it all the more better when he finally won. He chased the title forever. And I know Sheamus already has the title, but man, I mean, he just, I'm shocked whenever I see him look vulnerable, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
He even gets the better people in promos.
Yeah. They're making him just an unstoppable force. So, yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. Matilda has said in the chat room that is the correct answer. That is the that was the name of the bulldog that came out with the British Bulldogs, Matilda. Next question is, who did the Quebecers defeat for the WWE Tag Team titles? Who did the Quebecers defeat, and how did they defeat them? I'll go one up. Who did they defeat, and how did they defeat them? So, Impact Wrestling. Sting with TNA roster calls out Aces and Eights. Finally has tights inside boots. It's just one a random thing about me. I'm a Sting fan. For so long of a time, he's wore his tights outside of his boots, and he finally had them tucked in. I was like, okay, yeah, thank you. So he brings out James Storm, cuts a promo. Two members of Aces and Eights come out, comes in ring and gets jumped. Sting allows one of them to talk and says they all are in for a painful night. That's what the person of Aces and Eights said. Miss Tessmacher calls out Tara. It's open fight night, by the way. And then Tara defeats Miss Tessmacher. Robbie E. defeats RVD and AJ Styles, Bound for Glory series. Jeff Hardy calls out Robbie T., defeats him. Sting calls out Aces and Eights backstage. results of paternity test was after AJ Daniels and Kazarian cut promos. Claire Lynch's attorney comes out and reads statement from her saying it was all a fraud, which is a way of ending the feud and ending the Claire Lynch character. Sting coerces Ace and Ace backstage. They were attacked by Hulk Hogan with the bat. We saw the return of Hollywood Hogan. Chris Louis, gut check challenge, loses to Gunner. Mr. Anderson calls out Bully Ray, Bound for Glory series. He defeats Bully Ray. Aces and Eights attacks by Angle, Gunner, and Robbie T backstage during a match. And then Sting calls out the Aces and Eights. TNA roster fights Aces and Eights all over building. Eventually, at the end of the show, Aces and Eights gets upper hand on Austin Aries and hits him with the... They put his arm over the ladder and hits him with the chair. And they flee when Bully Ray runs in with the chain. Interesting. I like the open fight night concept. I like it. I like what they're doing with it. But it was kind of a weird night for me. I don't see why Robbie E. won the Bound for Glory series. He had the lowest point total. He won. He got 7 points, which makes him at 12. There's only a few more matches left before the Final Four competes at the No Surrender pay-per-view coming up here a couple weeks. So Robbie E. winning was just kind of a waste of a match to me. And then the Aces and Eights thing, it was a little overdone to me tonight, that night at the open fight night. It kind of took the mystique of the identity away because we saw a bunch of their faces, and I think I noticed one of them as an indie wrestler, but all the other ones I did not notice them, you know what I mean? So I'm not saying that all of them had to be some type of former wrestler, which I mean, I would prefer that, but I'm not saying that all of them have to be like former wrestlers, but at least keep the mystique, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, you know, why do they have Max on if you know, I mean, if basically you're going to beat them up, we're going to see their faces. Because in the beginning, Mike Tenay was like, okay, who is it? You know, can we see him? And they're, and I think when Angle was beating up on one of them, Angle and Sting, I think, was beating up on one of them. He was trying to keep him concealed a little bit. But at the eventually, we saw a few of their faces. It was just kind of weird to me. I think it was overdone. I wasn't a fan of it. Hopefully, they kind of rectify that, you know, with doing something a little better. I'm sure there's a payoff. Hope that the payoff is a lot better than 10-10-10 because it seemed like it's leading to Bound for Glory, the 10-10-10 payoff a few years ago. With Hardy turning heel and a couple of Jeff Jarrett turning heel that night too, and they started the whole Jeff Hardy world champion run, and Hogan turned heel and Bischoff did, and it was just kind of weird. It was just an awful payoff to me for the hype, and I really hope that this payoff isn't as bad as that one. There's some rumblings of who's the mastermind behind this, and If it ends up being true, I'm fine with that. I like it. I think it's a good idea. If the mastermind they have in store, that they have an idea, if it does happen that way, I think it would be a good idea. But hopefully they just write it a little bit better. So far I've liked how they've written it, but just tonight, the Oprah Fight Night was just a little bit overdone. And then finally, the gut check challenge was the absolute worst one so far. I mean, all the other ones, they have respectful indie careers. But this guy, I mean, his video packages were good, very respectful for, you know, he said that he didn't have much, he's doing it for his family. But his wrestling, I mean, for all those out there that didn't catch this gut check challenge, his name is Chris Lewis, K-R-I-S-L-E-W-I-E, and he fought Gunner. Oh, man, the timing was off. He was really slow and sluggish. Taz was trying his best not to just bury him, and it was just awful. I was just so embarrassed. I mean, I was embarrassed for him when I saw that match. So a weird open fight night to me, but it wasn't just ridiculously awful to me, though, but kind of weird.
Yeah, the Styles Daniels thing, the paternity test, that, yikes, what a waste of, what, 6 months? Or however long it's been going on.
Yeah, it's been quite some time.
I mean, that's awful. Then Robbie E with the upset of the year. What the heck is that about? Like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, even from a point stand, that's, wow. Upset of the year in TNA right there for me. And then last thing, Aces and Eights, like you said, keep the mystique. And I'll tell you what, it'd be awesome if the ringleader was somebody that, you know, hadn't even been in TNA but was an established name. That would be that'd be really cool. Like, even, you know, whoever they're using now, even if they got somebody tomorrow and, you know, had them come out and unmask, you know, like, that would be, that'd be pretty cool. Like a random, I don't know, with like D.H. Smith or something, you know, like that'd be
that's a good one.
A random name. Just somebody that, or, you know, but just a bigger name, of course, but somebody that hadn't been in TNA, you know.
That's a really good point. I mean, who just off the top of your head, who would you book in that spot?
Man, that's tough. And you know, WWE gets rid of so many people. I should be able to come up with somebody. I don't know. That's tough. Who would you choose? Because I'm not sure.
So I got a name for you, and let me know what you think. My choice would be Chris Masters.
I actually thought about him. And with the whole drama he had going on with his Twitter post a week or two ago, I mean, that, yeah, he's got some hype around him. That wouldn't be bad, because I thought about him, and, you know, one point in time, I was a Chris Masters fan, a very short point in time. Not calling him a slouch, but, yeah, he'd be one of the top candidates for sure of people that they have let go in the past 2 or 3 years. But that, I mean,
yeah,
it'd be an awesome thing if they could do that, you know. I mean, these guys got on masks anyway, so it's not like, hey, that's not the same body frame, or it goes back
right
to what we were talking about earlier. There's going to be some cheesiness. It's wrestling, sports entertainment, so whatever.
Yeah, definitely agree. I would be, I mean, I know, For all you listening, I'm not spoiling anything. Yes, I am a journalist. Yes, I do know a lot of reports, a lot of latest reports and things like that. But I'm not, I'm letting you know, I'm not spoiling anything. That would be a real, it would be a surprise to me. And I'm not surprised much because of the work I do. But Chris Masters would be a good idea. I think it would be a shocker to me as well. So would definitely not be opposed to that. Let's go quickly to ROH here. They're doing the tag team title tournament here. Coleman and Alexander defeats the Young Bucks, and Charlie Haas and Rhett Titus agree to team with each other. For those of you who don't know, Charlie Haas and Rhett Titus had to find tag team partners for the tag team title tournament due to Shelton Benjamin, another 0-2 reference there. Shelton Benjamin being suspended, and then Rhett Titus's partner, as of course we know, Kenny King, jumping ship over to TNA, and then the winner, they agreed to team with each other, and the winner would get both belts. QT Marshall defeats Tardius Thomas, and then finally Mike Mondo defeats Jay Lethal, Tommaso Ciampa, TJ Perkins, Mike Bennett, and Roderick Strong to become the number one contender of the TV title. I actually like that a lot. I really love what they do with the TV title. I think that they should do, I think that out of everything, the athleticism is just phenomenal. The quality of the matches are great. I really think that the WWE and TNA should learn from that, how they still have a prestigious TV title. You could throw in maybe the Intercontinental or the U.S. title for the WWE, but they still don't utilize those correctly. And then TNA has a TV title, but before, I think it was like 2 or 3 months ago, Hulk Hogan made an emphasis of Devon defending it every week, and that only lasted for like 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm not a fan of that. I mean, where's Devon? He's the TV champ, so the TV champ should do what Hulk Hogan said and fight. I mean, even if it's not every week, at least twice a month, you know what I mean? So I think that the TV champ should fight on TV, or at least they should make something like big out of it. They should have like number one contenders matches for the TV title like ROH is doing. So out of everything from ROH, the TNA and WWE should definitely learn from that type of emphasizing a TV title concept.
My thing for ROH is, has Steen and Rhino happened yet?
Yeah.
It has?
No.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say, I mean, I haven't seen it. I know their production is weeks late, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens here. That's why I'm like, I need to ask that and find out.
Yeah.
So.
yeah,
they just got to get better with that. I don't know. I just, and then I want to see Steen and Jay Lethal, man. I think I would have Steen beat Rhino and then go on to face Jay Lethal.
I would love for Jay Lethal to have a ROH title run. He's been TV champ, but not the ROH champ. Would definitely
what title
be well deserved.
What title did he have in TNA?
He had the X Division title and tag team title.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, the answer to the previous question was answered in the chat room. It was indeed the Steiner brothers. They defeated the Steiner brothers. The stipulation wasn't answered. It was a Quebec rules match. They beat the Steiners by disqualification. So, definitely a interesting concept there, the whole Quebec rules. So, all right, well, we got about 15 minutes left, so let's go into the flavor of the week.
Yeah, as we said earlier, going back 10 years, 2002, which was a heck of a year in wrestling. Me and Chris were just thinking about the class of 2002 and actually got us to thinking of multiple things that happened back in that year. Actually a really big year for WWE, and it's also funny too because that was the same year TNA debuted, so that's really funny.
And ROH.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the year after the whole absorbing WCW and ECW, so that's pretty crazy. And then first, I'll just talk about that class, since that was one of the main things we had talked about at first. That class of wrestlers, you got Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Randy Orton, Shelton Benjamin. There's more. I'll get to them. But those four were actually all in OVW together. I've actually seen on Randy Orton's I think I seen a promo where Cena was talking about it for some reason and just saying how all these guys were together. And, oh, no, yeah, it was the Batista DVD talking about how they were all together because I left Batista's name out. I'm sorry about that. He was another one. So that's crazy to have all them in a ring and a gym training together as nobodies. And you got at least John Cena and Randy Orton, our first ballot Hall of Famers. So that's pretty cool. Also, for Divas, Victoria was 2002, which is, of course, Tara and TNA. Mysterio and Scott Steiner, they both came over from WCW, not right away, but in 2002. Then also the biggest thing to come from WCW, which was also the biggest flop from WCW, was the New World Order. Basically, the only thing that did was get Hogan in and get him back in the red and yellow and Nash and Hall. That was about it for them. They never really did anything when they came back to WWE. HBK returned, had Hogan versus Rock. The first Hogan versus Rock. Brand extension, SmackDown and Raw splitting, and speaking of Rock, I believe he was the number one overall pick to SmackDown. I believe so, anyway. Change from World Wrestling F to WWE, so, which is still crazy to me how, after all those years, I don't know how the World Wildlife Fund won that lawsuit. That's still insane to me. I think it had been, what, WWF since like 1965 or something, 1970. So that's pretty crazy.
Around there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, Bischoff was in WWE. I remember that segment, Shane talking to Vince and saying, like, you're not really going to hire this guy. And then they said who it was, and it was kind of like, what? That's still weird. And the World Heavyweight Championship, which was the old WCW, the big gold belt, brought back, of course, and given to Triple H by Eric Bischoff.
Mm-hmm.
WWE tag titles, which were on SmackDown, I want to say. I believe they were. That's when we had two different tag team titles, which doesn't make any sense, but that was the year they debuted. And then also, before I go into my little points, Ruthless Aggression, was that term was coined for McMahon that year, and that's what actually brought Cena out to take on Angle in his debut match, and Cena could actually wrestle back then.
Yeah.
Go back and look at that match. Wow, he could actually wrestle. But he was also a smaller guy, so that may have been the reason. And then I just had some other quick points I thought of. 2002, WrestleMania 18, it was in Toronto, outside of the U.S., so that's pretty crazy. And then 10 years later, Triple H and Brock Lesnar face each other. That same year in 02, Triple H won the Royal Rumble, and Brock Lesnar won King of the Ring, which we'll kind of name drop here. Me and Chris were actually at that event, so that was pretty cool. Elimination Chamber was introduced in 02. The Kane, Triple H, Katie Vick story, that was October of 2002, when they had combined the Intercontinental Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship. Still don't know why they got rid of the IC title at that point. That was insane. Kane, actually, he brought in the new look with the half mask. That was one of the first time he had showed any of his face. He had that the first half mask and didn't have any burn marks, oddly. You know, so for him to be trapped in a fire and all that, he still never understood why he didn't have any burn marks. APA split up due to being drafted on separate shows. They had their last match in 02. That's crazy to think about. Of course, Bradshaw went on to become John Layfield Bradshaw, or John Bradshaw Layfield, I'm sorry. And we know him. He had held the title forever and put a exclamation point, made his career Hall of Fame with that. Another thing, Undertaker becomes 10-0 at WrestleMania, beating Ric Flair, and that was Ric Flair's first WrestleMania back in WWE. And Hogan won the WWE, well, it was the Undisputed, but it's technically now, he won the WWE title again for the first time, and whew, was that like 10 years prior, I think, because he had left
in
92 or 93. So,
yeah.
And then my last stat here, the last time, 2002 was the last time Big Show, The Undertaker, and Rock all held the WWE title. None of those three have had that title since then, and they've all been, well, Rock has come and gone, but they've never wrestled for another promotion since then. So for them to all be there, and they never had that title again 10 years. So, of course, Taker had the World Heavyweight Championship, and so did Big Show. So, and then Rock was there, but still, that's, I mean, 10 years, they have not had that WWE title.
Nice. Well, a couple of stats. I like to throw out stats there because it's just fun to throw out stats. The four that you said, and eventually five, which is Rey Mysterio, Batista, Orton, Lesnar, and Cena, which is the main 2000, the class, of course, those four, Batista, Orton, Lesnar, and Cena, and then counting Mysterio's debut since he is still an active wrestler. All five of those won a Royal Rumble. All four of the five have been World Heavyweight Champions, and all five have been WWE Champions. combined reigns as World Heavyweight Champion since 2002. For the five of them have been 11. And combined reigns of WWE championships between the five of them have been 22. So those five in the past 10 years have had a total of 33 world title reigns. So that is interesting. Yeah. So that pretty much proves the class there. And you know, Benjamin had an Intercontinental title. And then of course Orton's been Intercontinental champion. Cena's been U.S. champion. Orton's been Intercontinental champion. Rey Mysterio's been Intercontinental champion. They've all had tag team title runs, except for Brock Lesnar, I believe. But I mean, 33 world championships, and all of them have been Royal Rumble winners. So that pretty much tells you the investment that they had in that class. That pretty much says that, okay, so we're going to bring these people, especially the four that you said as far as the class and, you know, including Mysterio as far as his debut, we're going to take these four and you know, five people, and we're going to really do something with them. Interestingly enough, out of those five, that's the main five that Ryan mentioned, and I'm mentioning now, only one of them is inactive. That is Batista. So Lesnar was gone, and he came back, so he's an active wrestler now. I don't see, what's so interesting if, and then there's some rumblings that Batista may come back, but, you know, even honestly, I think that Batista would be kind of on the Brock Lesnar category, the Brock Lesnar, it's kind of past your time type of category, because I don't think that would have been, I don't think it would be a really good fit for Batista now, but I can still see John Cena getting more. Well, it's 33 right now, a total of 22 WWE championships, but looks like in a few weeks it might go up to 23. I could definitely see Randy Orton getting more championships, and I don't know, maybe Mysterio getting another title or so. But yeah, I mean, Mysterio has three world championships, Batista had six. I'm saying world championships as of WWE and World Heavyweight Championship. Mysterio has a total of three. Batista has a total of six. Orton had a total of nine. Lesnar had three WWE championships. And, of course, John Cena having a total of 12. And most likely 13. He has the record for the WWE championship title runs, as he has 10 total. When, 10 as of this show, but there's a really good chance that that's going to go up one, at least one. Quick question for you. How many WWE title reigns do you see John Cena accumulating? How many more title reigns do you see him accumulating before he retires?
Oh, geez. I wanted to say 2 to 3, but I think he'll get, because I think he'll win at Night of Champions or sometime soon. That's kind of like maybe 3 to 4. But I'll 3. I'll go 3.
3?
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, man, you know.
Yeah.
We say 3 now, but
yeah.
I mean, heck, he's only 35. You know what I mean? So
he's went this long without the title, though.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, you know, does he stay for 5 more years? You know what I mean? And
yeah, because
if that
ethic, man, his work ethic, he strains himself for sure, not taking time off.
Definitely. Yeah. So, 35, you know, that's in wrestling age, you know, that's these days is not – well, it depends on the tenure, really, because, you know, the funny part is Orton seems like he's reaching the twilight of his career, and he's only 32. So, actually, he's turning 32, I believe, this year. If he hasn't turned it yet, I know he was born in 1980. His birthday, for some reason, slipping my mind. I'll remember in a second, but yeah, but he's been around since 02, so it's like, you know, it's kind of like he's reaching the twilight of his career, you know. So, you know, I don't, and the thing is, as young as he is, he's 32. His birthday was April 1st, but as young as he is, only 32 years old, you know, someone who. Respectfully, maybe have another. I mean, according to the length of a typical wrestler, which is, I mean, say 40. You know, is when you kind of reach that mark. You know, that's 8 years from now for Orton. You know what I mean? And it's kind of hard for me to see that. It's kind of hard for me to see Orton being in the company for another 8 years.
If they ever push other people, other superstars, then you know we wouldn't have to worry about. Cena and Orton winning titles, we just worry about them entertaining, you know. So they don't have to.
Yeah, but you know how Vince is.
No, I mean, we could be talking about Sandow and Cesaro 10 years from now. Yeah, I know it's a long shot, but who would ever thought with any of those guys? I mean, look at all of them when they debuted: Batista, Orton, Cena. All of them looked goofy, you know, like they're. You never would have thought they would be the character they were now. Stone Cold Steve Austin, like how he was, you know.
Let's not forget that Batista and Orton's really the catapult moments of their career really didn't start until 2003 because Orton came in and. Beat Holly and got injured, and then did the RNN thing for a second, and then kind of like slowly made his way into a heel.
Gone at one point, you know. So
And then Batista,
John Cena dressing up as Vanilla Ice and rapping.
Yeah, exactly.
Got made fun of. That was turned him around. So.
Yeah, and then Batista debuted. Yeah, that one night exactly. And then Batista debuted as Deacon Batista with Devon in 2002. That was his 2002.
Yeah,
and then
funny story. I remember me and Chris were actually watching that SmackDown he debuted, and we had left the room and came back in, and it was going off. And, you know, this is so long ago, there wasn't DVR to rewind it, so we had actually thought it was Bull Buchanan. Remember that? Yeah. So that tells you right there.
He thought it was Bull Buchanan. That is enough to end the show right there. Thank you so much for listening. That was very fun. Bull Buchanan there. So Crave Wrestling at gmail.com for other flavor of the week topics that you would like. Follow us at Crave Wrestling. Like us on Facebook at Crave Wrestling. I actually have an article about this called The 10 Highlights of 10 Years Ago. Check it out on Bleacher Report. Find me, Chris Featherstone, and check out this as well as my other articles. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket for next week. Had a great show today. Thank you so much for your support, and we will be here next week. Goodbye.